Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are getting into something that we periodically touch on. That is the world of infrastructure development and infrastructure projects. And for today, we are joined by the team from two particular organizations, that are completing a hydroelectric project in Eswatini, that is the African Clean Energy Developments, as well as Energy Infrastructure Management Services. Those are the two organizations that have announced the financial closed, and construction, to be commencing of a 13.5 megawatt, hydropower project that's happening in Eswatini. And we're just going to be getting a sense, of what that actually means, some of the implications from a funding point of view, and also, what is the state of such projects in a place like Eswatini, but also what it's telling us, about projects in the region. Joining me, I've got the team of James Cumming, who is the Chief Executive Officer of ACED, as well as Michael Wickens, who is the Chief Commercial Officer of EAMS Africa. Gentlemen, greetings to you today.
Hi, Madiwa. Good to meet you.
Morning, Madiwa.
All right. James, I'm just going to start with you, with this one. Maybe you could give us a breakdown, of the project. What does it actually entail? Having read through a little bit around this, my understanding is that there's a project that's slated hydropower. You guys have gone out to the market and have been able to raise a bunch of money, and it's now time to actually build said project. This is my rough understanding. You can give us some color around what's actually happening.
Sure, I'm happy to. And thanks again for having us on. The project's a run of river hydro, 13.5 megawatts in capacity. That's roughly about 11,000 typical South African homes worth of power, just to give it some context to how much energy it's able to generate. The project's history is an interesting one in that members of our team were aware of the opportunity as early as 2005, so all 20 years ago, but the project took some time to come to market. Hydro power plants are complicated and require a lot of investigation, feasibility studies, and environmental assessments to ensure everything is able to be done sustainably and in a risk-adjusted way. The project then was part of a procurement process that was run by the Eswatini government in 2015, post having determined that this was a viable opportunity. And African Clean Energy Developments, or ACED, alongside our shareholders, African Infrastructure Investment Managers, AIM, which is a member of the Old Mutual Group, were successful in that procurement round. And since 2015, we've spent 10 years further refining the development, getting the requisite permits in place, understanding how best to finance the project, and coming to terms with the Eswatini Electricity Company, the EEC, who is the off-taker. They will be buying the power over a 30-year contract. That's longer than it would typically take to do a renewables project these days. But hydro is complicated, as I mentioned, and it's also a first of its kind in Eswatini, where, similar to what has been done in South Africa, they were going to market for the first time with a private power project, i.e. a project that would be owned by a private company or a set of private investors, built and operated by the private sector with a power purchase agreement to the utility over a period of time. And there were a number of regulatory hurdles that needed to be assessed and overcome, given it being a first of its kind, and that took some time, but also just the complexity of the project and the procurement process. So we're extremely excited to have reached financial close, which was on Christmas Eve of 2024. The human condition is to use all the time you've got. And I think that's what happened here, and just needing to get all of our ducks in a row. The project's being financed under a limited recourse project finance structure, which means that all of the funding and the finance and the security for the lenders is linked to the project. And that means an extra level of rigor is applied to how the projects is due diligence and all the contracts are put in place. I would say in the region of 60%, is it Mike, is senior debt?
Yeah, just slightly less than that, but yeah, close enough.
So we have a set of funders that all had to come together and agree final terms. And those final terms were agreed late last year, and then the documentation settled between the financiers as shareholders and lenders and the government. That's what financial close refers to. So it's when construction can commence. And so the parties involved over the years have been ourselves and then Eames Africa, our sister company. We have a common shareholder. ACID does the development transactions and delivery end of the life cycle and or value chain. And Eames, we work together in an overlapping way on some of those work streams, but they take over as asset manager and operations and maintenance manager. In this case, too. And then the shareholders in the project are AIM through their Ideas Fund, which is a SADC fund able to invest in infrastructure in the region, in the SADC region, as well as PSPF, which is the Eswatini Public Pension Fund. And then Standard Bank has taken the senior debt alongside PSPF in addition. So a lot of stakeholders, a lot of companies, that's not even to mention the regulatory authorities in Eswatini, the contractors involved. There are three, which is civils, then there's electrical or grid, and then the turbines. It takes an army, a lot of collective action, and we're really proud to have helped bring all of that together. But it's impossible without everyone playing their part.
Yeah, it really does sound like there's to your point, like there's a lot of stakeholders, involved in something like this, and you have to bring a lot of expertise and different people from both the public and private sector, to the table to actually make sure that this thing firstly gets funded, and then we, get to a point of building it and then actually supplying the electricity. Michael, maybe I could just ask you to jump in here to get a sense of, when we talk 20 years, right, people might want, I think James has given us some good color around why. Yeah, things have taken as long as they have. But maybe you could give us a sense of what the next steps from this point are, and especially the question that would be on most people's minds. If you're a person in Eswatini, you're asking yourself, okay, when are we actually going to start feeling the benefits of this power? When does it actually come on grid, right? How many years does that take? If we've taken 2 decades to get to this point now, you're right, when do we actually start feeling, you know, the lights going on and off? That's firstly. And then if you're an investor, you're also thinking to yourself, at what point do we start, you know, recouping on something like this? There's an offtake agreement. We're going to get our money back, but that can only be, you know, once the project is done and we're starting to deliver that electricity.
Thanks, Madiwa. Yeah. So I suppose most importantly, construction started on the 7th of January. So after a very short break between Christmas and the New Year, our contractor, which is an Eswatini civils contractor, so important to note that it's going to create local jobs, certainly for the construction phase, and then it will ramp down a little bit during the operations phase. But at any one point in time, we're looking to have between 100 and 150 workers on site participating in the construction of this plant. Hydro construction has a complication in that you are reliant on the flow of the river to ensure that your construction stays on schedule. So if we have unusually high rainfall, that obviously will slow construction down a little bit, but we hope that we've properly taken that risk into account. We've planned a construction schedule around that, which will allow for that to happen to a degree. And we're anticipating a full construction schedule of 26 months. So, we hope, just after Christmas in 2026, we'll be able to, have some good news to share with the people of Eswatini and that project will come online and start producing power. And you know, the great thing about hydroelectric power is that unlike the solar plant, as you can imagine, where the sun goes down and the plant goes offline, unless you've got battery storage accompanying it, a hydro plant just runs day and night. So provided that you have rainfall and the river keeps running, you know, you've got what is colloquially referred to, we don't love the phrase, but the market understands it as baseload power. So it's a fantastic resource and it will be a very beneficial plant for the country. In terms of investor returns, you know, we've done our absolute best to ensure that we're providing value for money, both to Eswatini, and ensuring that investors make a reasonable return over time. The way that it's structured, obviously, is that there is a large portion of debt that needs to be paid down, and that will mean that dividends up front are slightly reduced, but that obviously levels out over time. And investors expect a greater share of their return to come in the latter years of the power purchase agreement. But it's all structured in a sense that we like to think that everyone is being dealt with equitably. Lenders are being repaid. The price that is being charged under the power purchase agreement is regulated and predictable, and investors will get a reasonable market-related return.
All right. I'm going to throw this one out. I'm not sure which one of you can answer this one, but I'm very curious about the funding aspect, because we're celebrating the financial close. One of the areas that I spend my time looking at a lot is telecoms. And in the world of telecoms, there's a lot of appetite from lenders and private equity players and other funders when it comes to infrastructure projects. We've actually seen a lot of money and big checks being signed on the side of fiber. We're also seeing a lot of deals being done on the side of, you know, masts and towers, you know, that type of thing over there. So big appetite. But I'm curious about, you know, something like hydro. Obviously, energy is a big, you know, it's big. These tend to be big projects. They're strategic. You know, they have national importance, and it's testament, you know, to what James was saying earlier on about the number of people that have to be called around the table to make, you know, something like this happen. What's the appetite like, you know, from the funding community when it comes to hydro projects, and whatever you can share around how much it takes to get something like this, you know, off the ground. Yeah.
Sure. I'm happy to take that, Madiwa. So James referred in his very first remark to this being a run-of-river hydro project, and perhaps just worth spending a moment just explaining what that means. Unlike a Kariba dam, for example, there is no dam in a run-of-river hydro project. So a big part of the complication behind big hydro projects is the construction of a dam. It has a potentially huge geotechnical impact building a large dam, and that's something that we don't have here. So it is a technically easier plant to build, and that's why you'll find with large dam hydroelectric power plants, you'll usually find development finance and multinational institutions taking up a majority of the funding exposure on those plants, because they can suffer quite lengthy delays, and they can experience difficulty in repaying such not exorbitant but very, very large amounts of debt. In a run of river plant, as I say, you don't have that additional expense of construction of a major dam, and so the debt is at a more manageable level. We can share that the total funding of debt and equity into this plant was in the order of about 1.3 billion Emalangeni, which is pegged 1-to-1 to Rand, so amount in Rand, and we did. Experienced great support from the lenders in this project. You know, every project, certainly in a project finance environment, which is where we almost exclusively operate, the project has to stand on its own 2 feet, and the lenders will only come in if the merits justify it. So, you know, we look at the resource risk, which is the primary risk. You know, in this case, how much water flow we can predict, and we have quite extensive records going back and which demonstrate the amount of water that flows down this river and the amount of rainfall that we get on an annual basis. And we protect the lenders through cover ratios so that they have a certain level of comfort that the project is going to produce enough revenue to ensure that their debt is repaid over the period of time that they're lending the money for, and understand that the debt comes in for a shorter period than the full length of the PPA. So while the PPA that we have with AEC is for 30 years, as James mentioned, the debt will be repaid in a materially shorter period than that. So lenders have an extended period of revenue that goes beyond their predicted repayment period, in which should there be any delay in their repayment, there is still revenue coming through from the contract to keep them whole.
All right. Now, I think that makes sense from that point of view. Billion Rand is, you know, that's a good chunk of change. I was just doing a quick calculation in my head, $60-65 million, somewhere there. I guess depending on the exchange rate, you know, that you're using. And I guess that's testament to the size of the projects that are being had. But I wanted to maybe take a step back a little bit, James, to get your sense of hydro, right? Because to what Michael was saying, this is a project that is as complex as it is, it's less complex than if there was a dam that was going to have to be built. And obviously this is in the renewable space. But when it comes to, I guess, energy provision and these types of projects, solar has also been, you know, something that's also been, you know, something big. What else have you guys been, you know, working on? What's the, you know, what else is going on, you know, in the ASED universe and also the EAMS Africa universe? Where else are you guys partnering? What other projects have you guys been working on?
It's been a busy 2 years. We currently have 530 megawatts of projects in construction in South Africa. Those are all wind. We just brought the first private power project into operations for Sasol. They're the off-taker there. That's called the Msenge Wind Farm. That in total meant we had 600 in construction. 70 of that is now into operations. We've got to deliver the remaining 530-odd. Another one of those is the Castle Wind Farm for Sibanye-Stillwater. That should be hitting operations in the next month or so. And then beyond that, we've got another 420. Altogether, that's about 20 billion rand of CapEx invested. So there's a lot on the go, and I think it's really been down to the foresight of government and their response to the power crisis in opening up the market to allow us as private companies, both generators and buyers, to come together and sell electricity between ourselves, and not just any electricity, but clean renewable power. So it's a fantastic space to be in. We've been leading that market, among the leaders in that market, which has been really exciting because we're all learning by doing. Exciting, but stressful when you're learning by doing with those sorts of numbers and that sort of scale, and the responsibility that we have to our staff primarily, but just as importantly, our shareholders and lenders. We're needing to be extremely focused on all the detail, and there's a lot of detail in their five projects across various parts of the country. So that's wind and our sort of journey of late. Solely private power, solely wind. But we've done a lot of PV in the past as well. We have a portfolio of about a gigawatt of projects that EAMS Africa manages. And those are all in the REAP program, where ACID develops the sites and brings them into operations, and EAMS takes over as the asset manager. And that portfolio in total, so circa 1.6 gigs and growing, is split about 60% solar and 40% wind. So we've got a lot of deep solar experience too, but we haven't been doing as much solar of late. The most recent solar we did was for Harmony Gold, a 30 megawatt project for them. But we are in the midst of ramping up to be in the midst of closing a very large solar PV plant as well in South Africa that we hope to close by the end of this year. That's 475 megawatts in scale.
All right. Now, it makes sense. And, Michael, your take on this one, what I'm curious, is about if someone wants to move quickly, because it doesn't feel like anything happens quickly, in this. And it's understandable. These are big projects. But for someone that is, there's a crunch element to it. I can imagine that over the last couple of years, especially because of load shedding, that put a lot of pressure on these types of, renewables projects, people, trying to get things over the line as quickly as possible so that they can rely on the grid less. Many of us thought that load shedding was a thing of the past, but at the time of recording, we saw load shedding just a couple of days ago, for the first time in over 300 days, right? So sometimes, obviously, speed doesn't really lend itself to this sector, but for whatever's considered to be fast, and actually, let's get this over the line quickly as possible. Obviously, we've been talking about hydro. James just gave us, a sense of the wind and solar projects that you guys have. But, you know, for people that want to move quickly or something that has the shortest time span to actually get over the line, what are we looking at right now in the environment?
Madhuri, yes. So look, developing a large scale, and just remember that we do deal exclusively in large scale renewable energy projects. So our businesses don't look at things like rooftop or shopping centers. We're looking at commercial industrial scale projects. So, 30 megawatts is probably the smallest we've done before this hydro project that we started chatting about, but we like to look at the bigger scale stuff. And a project of that size, by the time you've got all the necessary authorizations, environmental authorizations and permitting and everything in place and fully developed and designed a project, it takes on average around 6 years. But we've been doing this now for, James has been in this business for 15 years and I've been in the renewable space for an equivalent amount of time. What the ASA team have been very good at is building up a pipeline of projects. So we now are in a position where we can, we hope, in a fairly orderly fashion, bring projects online every year. So clients that are looking for power, we have to look at their demand, what they're looking for, when they need it, because solar and wind have different supply profiles. And usually a mix of those together, potentially with some battery storage, we will design a solution around the needs of our clients. So someone who needs power urgently and is looking to offset their exposure to Eskom and bring on renewable energy, we're in a position to talk to them about projects that we have that are almost fully developed, that are nearly ready to come to market, because those obviously don't have a particularly long time frame to close. So as James said, we're looking at bringing a solar project that's nearly half a gigawatt into construction later this year, and that will be commissioned in a unitized phase over a 24 to 30 month period. So clients that are looking for that, we are very happy to speak to. But to give you an idea, I mean, one of the wind projects that we have in construction at the moment, we started talking to Richards Bay Minerals about that project, and we closed with them 6 months later. That project is now well into construction. So on a basis, we like to, as I say, we like to think we act very fairly and treat our off-takers with integrity. And so we think that enables us to accelerate that process and to bring these projects to close a little bit sooner, perhaps, than some of the other players in the market.
As you guys are talking, I'm reminded of my days in the Eastern Cape, when there were a lot of wind projects that were being built at that time. And you'd often be on the highway and you'd see these massive trucks that would have like one of the blades, and they were massive. And I remember we would go, one of our lecturers actually had a wind turbine on his farm, and, just going and seeing just one of those things. And then there's certain places between what used to be called Grahamstown, now Makanda, and Port Elizabeth, those areas where you have giant wind farms, and just the sheer scale of it all, firstly in terms of size and the machinery, and then secondly the cost, it does seem as if, to your point, Michael, about the fact that an average project, takes 6 years, that you need a certain level of foresight and, proper planning, when it comes to these projects. So that's where I want to end off, with you guys. I'll start off with Michael, and then James, you can have the last take, is to say, where whatever you guys are seeing in the market, because you guys have a pipeline of projects that you're working on right now that are current at various phases of either being raised funds for or in build, is to say, how are you guys seeing the market developing, or where do you see the demand coming from? Does it continue to, you know, be, because a lot of the projects that James alluded to earlier on are corporates, you know, a lot of, you know, corporate demand, you know, some of the 30 megawatts, et cetera. We spent the first half of today's conversation, for example, talking about national demand in Eswatini, right? Michael even spoke about probably one of the older hydro plants in the region, that's Kariba, right? And that's in Zimbabwe. Where's the demand coming from? Do you continue focusing on South Africa and places, you know, that are nearby like Eswatini? Are there conversations with some of the regional players, you know, either, you know, surrounding countries, because energy security is something that is, you know, paining everyone right now, you know, in the region. So where are the conversations happening, and, you know, how are you seeing the demand, you know, developing over time? And does it continue to be in that wind, solar, hydro type of space, or are we seeing maybe an emergence of, you know, other technologies or other forms of power generation?
Madhuri, yeah, there's a lot to cover in that question. happy to give it a shot. Yeah, so look, there's no shortage of demand. I mean, we've got a couple of factors at play. The one is endless increasing costs from Eskom in terms of the power that it supplies. You've seen that just last week they had asked for a 36% increase in tariffs. NERSC has only granted them approximately a third of that. But still, these are kind of well north of annual inflation increases that South African consumers are having to absorb. And so that's the one push factor away from Eskom and into renewables. The other, obviously, is that there is a push to green, especially amongst the big industrials and miners, you know, for them to export their products. There are carbon related tariffs called CBAMs, which are coming into play and which are going to make the cost of our exports comparatively more expensive as compared to the rest of the world. So that's why we're seeing the big miners and industrials trying to decarbonize their operations to a degree. So there's no shortage of demand. Where we are limited, certainly in South Africa, is in terms of transmission capacity. It's the ability, you know, if you think of the transmission system as the national highways, we're running out of off-ramps, or on-ramps, I should say. And so we're now seeing what is referred to now as the National Transmission Company. It's will be carved out of Eskom, but at the moment is an Eskom subsidiary. But that's going to be the transmission system operator, and they're now launching have launched a request for information to the private sector to see who would be interested in assisting them in building extra transmission capability. And that is an absolutely critical thing. It has to happen, because without it, we just simply can't plug in more generation. So that program needs to roll out, and it needs to roll out quickly. And thereafter, we will be able to connect a lot more wind, solar, hydro in South Africa and in the region. In terms of regional demand, again, the demand is there. So we are looking at opportunities north of the border, and you know, each time we go into a new country, the same process we've just gone through in Eswatini, we have to learn about the particular regulatory environment, understand the rules and protocols and the risks that we would face in that particular geography. But one of the things that will enable us to do that is what's called the South African Power Pool, which is an interconnector between various Southern African regions, which allows supply and provision of power in between regions, and that's a great de-risking factor for projects that are looking to build regionally. So the demand is there, the lending appetite is there, the investment appetite is there, and certainly the development and delivery capability is there. What we're lacking, as I say, certainly in South Africa at the moment, is the transmission network availability, and that's the big bottleneck at the moment.
James, You can have the last word on this one.
Yeah, not too much further to add. I mean, you know, this is also all in the context of transition. And it really comes down to coal obsolescence and an aging fleet in South Africa and a need for us all to focus on decarbonization alongside growing the South African and regional economy. We can't just be meeting supply and demand. We need to be ensuring there's a solid reserve margin. And in that way, there's not only demand, there's desperation for power in ensuring we have a stable power supply, security of supply, also driving development and ensuring that that development enables the growth and development of people's needs in the region. I mean, even if you just look at electrification rates, certainly outside of South Africa, but even at home, more people need power. How we balance the sustainability of that is a very important question. You know, we're focused on doing it through decarbonization, but that doesn't happen overnight. You know, our coal fleet is going to be around for some time. The other thing we need to be cognizant of is that renewables can't do it alone. It's intermittent, and we can solve some of that intermittency with batteries, but that really just moves generation around. So there is a very important place for gas. And we need to be focusing on that as much as we are renewables. It's a renewables enabler. It's a transition enabler where we can use peaking technology to fill the gap where renewables can't supply.
So that's where we end off today's discussion. It has been a great one, just understanding what's happening in the world of, you know, power, but more specifically renewable, you know, energy in the region. Just talking to the team, you know, from these two organizations, you know, talking about the fact that they recently, you know, had their project reaching financial close, you know, just before Christmas. I think that's what, you know, James was letting us know just now that financial close was actually reached, you know, just before Christmas. And then construction on this particular project in Eswatini started around the 7th of January. So we have African Clean Energy Developments, ACED, as well as Energy Infrastructure Management Services, that is EAMS Africa. So we spent the first half just talking about that Eswatini project, what it has taken to get to this point, James giving us some history over the last 20 years. That's how long it's been in the making. And then Michael giving us a sense of some of the next steps and when we expect energy to actually, you know, start being produced and to come online from this. So we're looking at a timeline of roughly 26 months, you know, cost of roughly 1.3 billion rand in total, with a big part of that, I believe, just under 60%, you know, being in the form of debt, also giving us a sense of the regulatory environment, the different government agencies, the different investors, you know, such as African Infrastructure Managers, that is AIM, managed by the Ideas Fund, and also the Eswatini Public Service Pension Funds, you know, as some of the shareholders with strong support from Old Mutual Eswatini, to give us a sense of how big that project is and the different stakeholders. And then taking a step back to look at, you know, projects in the region, the team, you know, the two companies, two organizations organizations, sister organizations, have been managing a number of different projects. We got a sense of the different, wind and solar projects that they've been working on, and then also a sense of how long it takes to bring, something like this on, especially the big projects that they are involved in. Roughly 6 years, that's on average, that's how long it takes. And then ending off getting a sense of, some of the demand drivers in future, where the demand is going to come from, but in a realistic sense, what the necessary composition of, power generation and transmission is going to need to be. To James's point, it's not, just renewables that are going to be able to, push, these grids forward. You need a combination of different, powers and a source. So that's been it. We were in conversation with James Cummings, who is the CEO of ACED, as well as Michael Wickens, who is the Chief Commercial Officer over at EAMS Africa. Gents, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks very much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.